So I want to pick up in volume 16, February the 10th, and we're talking about total surrender to the divine will. And the thing is total, 100%, not 75%. Louisa said, I was thinking to myself about all that was written in these past days. And I said to myself that they were neither necessary nor serious things. Now, she usually gets corrected when she says that. That I could have done without putting them on paper. But obedience wanted it so. And I had the duty to say fiat also in this. But as I was thinking about this, my beloved Jesus told me, yet, my daughter, everything was necessary in order to make known how to live in the divine will. By not saying everything, you would cause some quality about how to live in the divine will to be missing, and therefore they could not have the full effect of the living in the divine will. As, for example, on the abandonment of living in the divine will, if the soul did not live completely abandoned, there's your 100%. And that's also your Deuteronomy 6, 4 to 10. To love the Lord with all of your heart, all of your soul, all of your mind and all of your being. That's the 100%. If the soul did not live completely abandoned to my will, she would be like someone who lived in a sumptuous palace and she leaned out of the window or of a balcony or went down the main door, to the main door. So only seldom and in passing does the poor one pass through some of the rooms, and therefore she knows little of the regime, of the work that is needed, of the goods that are present, and of what she can take and of what she can give. Who knows how many goods are in there, and she knows little about it. Therefore she does not love that place, that palace, as she should love it, nor does she esteem it as it deserves. Now, for the soul who lives in my will and is not completely abandoned to it, self-reflections, cares for oneself. Now, these are the problems about not giving. Self-reflection. I'm cold and I'm hot and I'm not well and I'm this and I'm that and I'm the other. Cares for herself. I'm looking after my own needs. Fears. Fear is a huge problem preventing us from abandoning ourselves to the divine will. If you take fear, F, false, E, events, A, appearing, or real. So it's false events appearing real. In other words, Satan puts these shimmers in front of you and you give your attention to that and not to the reality. Disturbances. Now, from volume one to volume four, the Lord keeps on daily almost on you do not allow disturbance in your innermost being, because that allows an opening for the enemy to get a grip. These are nothing other than windows, balconies and main doors that she forms in my will. In other words, escape routes. And by going out very often, she is forced to see and to feel the miseries of human life. And since the miseries are her own property, while the riches of my will are mine, she becomes more attached to the miseries than to the riches. And so she will not come to love. Now you need to put a VIP beside that. Because the essence of the message of divine will is divine will and love. God is love. Everything must end in love. Everything must resolve in the divine will. You were taught that in volume 11. She will not come to love, nor will she enjoy what it means to live in my will, because she's giving attention to stuff that isn't divine will. And having formed the main door, one day or another, she will go away to live in the miserable hovel of her own will. So what he's doing there is showing us how we slip out without really noticing what's happening. See then how complete abandonment in me is necessary in order to live in my will. My will does not need the miseries of the human will. It wants the creature to live together with the divine will. Beautiful. just as the divine will delivered her from its womb, without the miserable provision that she has formed for herself in the exile of life. Otherwise, there would be disparity, which would bring sorrow to my will and unhappiness to the human will. Now, the thing he tells us most frequently is that the human will brings unhappiness and that the divine will brings complete happiness. Okay. So, in the next paragraph, he's going to talk about knowledge with understanding, which is one of the gifts of the Spirit, and the plan he has for renewing the church. Do you see how necessary it is to make them understand that complete abandonment is needed in order to live in my will? Now, to translate that into our language, it means that we have to teach one another frequently about this. In other words, we need to be reminded every now and then in case we forget. And you say it's not necessary to write about it. I feel compassion for you, Jesus said, because you do not see what I see, and therefore you take it lightly. How true that is. But in my all-seeingness, I see that these writings will be for the church like a new sun, which will rise in her midst. And drawn by its blazing light, creatures will apply themselves in order to be transformed by this light and become spiritualized. Spiritualized is the exact opposite of the weight of the flesh, and divinized, the exact opposite of the weight of the human will, okay, in such a way that the church will be renewed and they will transform the face of the earth. So what Jesus is describing here is how the church will rise from the dead. Isn't it fantastic? And it's given very, very straight and simple. So the doctrine on my will is the purest, the most beautiful, not subject to any shadow of the material or of interest, that is self-interest, both in the supernatural and in the natural order. I think you saw that demonstrated on Saturday. Therefore, like the sun, it will be the most penetrating, the most fertile, and the most welcomed and appreciated. And being light, of its own, it will make itself understood and will make its way. That's terribly important. When you get up in the morning, all you've got to do is pull back the curtains and the light comes in. You don't have to have any ceremony about it. Just let the light in. But you will notice, if you stop before you pull back the curtains, that the light has managed to get round the curtains and to get under them and to get over them. The light will find its way in. Now, that is my joyful hope for the re-evangelization of the church, that the light will do its own work. Isn't it fantastic? So we don't have to be clever. We don't have to have any special programs on. Being light, of its own, it will make itself understood and will make its way, that is, into the hearts of the people. It will not be subject to doubts or suspicions of error. And if some word is not understood, it will be because of too much light, which eclipsing the human intellect will not allow them to understand the whole fullness of that truth. Now, that is very true about studying Louisa's writings, that you can come up against something and you, at this moment, cannot either explain it or understand it. What you do is you keep going, because the Lord is the divine teacher. He's the total teacher. He keeps coming back over the material over and over again, and he goes at it from slightly different angles. In the end, you go back and you read it and you say, ah, that's what it means. It's really fantastic. And notice he says that the reason is not your low intelligence. The reason is that the light is too strong. And therefore, at this particular moment, you can't see it. However, they will find not one word which is not the truth, which is fantastic. That's a wonderful thing to say about all of these writings. At the most, they will not be able to understand it fully. Therefore, in view of the good which I see, I push you to neglect nothing in writing. One saying, one effect, one simile about my will can be like beneficial dew upon souls, just as dew is beneficial on the plants after a day of burning sun, or like a pouring rain after long months of drought. You cannot understand all the good, the light, the strength contained in each word. But we do in studying it, don't we? You know that even by reading this material, you're getting grace given to you and understanding, even if you don't have the words to say it to anybody else. So you cannot understand all the good, the light and the strength contained in each word. But your Jesus knows it and knows the ones whom it must serve. That's all of us. And the good it must do as well. Now, as he was saying this, he showed me a table in the middle of the church and all the writings about the divine will placed on it. Many venerable people surrounded that table and became transformed into light and divinized. Now, that's the issue we're going to see in Louisa in the volumes that are coming up, that she is more and more and more transformed into light. That is, dematerialized and spiritualized, because God is pure spirit, and to be fully one with him, we will have to be spiritualized and divinized as well. And as they walked, they communicated that light to whomever they encountered. Look at this. Once a person is spiritualized and divinized, you give it to everyone, even if you're not conscious of the fact that you're doing it. Okay. And Jesus added, "You will see this great good from heaven when the church will receive this celestial food, which will strengthen her and make her rise again in her full triumph." This is the spiritual resurrection of the church. I mean, it's fantastic. So he's saying it's going to come through the divine will. So let's come to February the 16th, 1924. The immense sorrow and the infinite joys of the heart of Jesus, one who with love and submission shares his sorrows, also shares in his joys. I was thinking about the sorrows of the most, we would say, sacred heart of Jesus, Louisa said. Oh, how my pains disappeared when compared to his. And my beloved Jesus told me, "My daughter, the sorrows of my heart are indescribable. And they are inconceivable to the human creature because they're divine as well as human. And because we're only small creatures, it's difficult for us to comprehend anything that is divine. You must know that each beat of my heart was a distinct sorrow. Each heartbeat brought me a new sorrow, one different from the other. Human life is a continuous palpitating of the heart, understood. If the heartbeat ceases, life ceases. Imagine now what torrents of sorrow each beat of my heart brought me up to the last moment of my dying. Why is that? Because Louisa tells you quite clearly in the Hours of the Passion that Jesus had every single one of us inside of him. And Jesus also teaches this in volume 11. So you might just put CF volume 11 beside that. Jesus tells us that he repaired every sin one by one. Every single fault of every single one of us. And this is what he means here by the torrents of sorrow that he had. And of course, this explains the agony in the garden. So you know where to look for this, don't you? In the Hours of the Passion. So what torrents of sorrow each beat of the heart brought me up to the last moment of my dying. From the moment I was conceived up to the last heartbeat, it did not spare me, bringing me new pains and bitter sorrows. The new pains, of course, are the new sins. However, you must also know that my divinity, which was inseparable from me, watching over my heart, while letting a new sorrow enter at each heartbeat, it also let enter new joys, new contentments, new harmonies and celestial secrets. Notice the balance, right? Balance in your margin at the side. Notice the balance. With God, nothing is out of balance. Okay, so from the divinity, he gets the joys and the contentments and all the rest of it. I can't at this moment quote the saint that said Jesus had perfect joy on the cross because he was divine. And he had perfect sorrow on the cross because he was human. Okay, that balance there is very important. If I was rich in sorrow, Jesus said, and my heart enclosed immense seas of pain, I was also rich in happiness, in infinite joys, and in unreachable sweetness. I would have died at the first heartbeat of sorrow if the divinity, loving this heart with an infinite love, that's Jeremiah 31:3, and John 15:9, as the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Loving this heart with infinite love had not let each heartbeat resound in two within my heart, sorrow and joy, bitterness and sweetness, pains and contentments, death and life, humiliation and glory, human abandonments and divine comforts. You see the two natures of Christ illustrated there. His two natures held in hypostatic union is the way the church describes it. If you want to write hypostatic, it's H-Y-P-O-S-T-A-T-I-C. The two natures held in hypostatic union. So he gets all the joys of heaven and all the sorrows of earth in the same person. That must have been an unbearable weight to carry. It must have made living on the earth almost unbearable when he knew exactly what the joys of heaven were. Oh, if you could look into my heart, Jesus said, you would see everything centralized in me, all the joys, all the sorrows, all possible and imaginable sorrows from which creatures rise again to new life, and all contentments and divine riches which flow from my heart like many seas as I diffuse them for the good of the whole human family. But that this diffusing of all the joys and everything from his heart very well illustrated in the Divine Mercy image and also in the image of the Sacred Heart from Margaret Mary Alacoque. Okay. But who shares more in these immense treasures of my heart? It is one who suffers more. For each pain, for each sorrow, there is a special joy in my heart, which follows that pain or sorrow suffered by the creature. So for each pain, for each sorrow, there is a special joy in my heart, and this follows that pain or sorrow which is suffered by the creature. Sorrow renders her more dignified, more lovable, more dear, and worthy of sympathy. Now that's worthy of underlining. When a person has successfully gone through a time of crisis in their lives and they have allowed the Lord to work in them and through them, what you find is that they come out of it wiser, they come out of it humbler, they come out of it much more free, they come out of it a much, much better person, that the whole thing has actually put them on a much higher plane. And Jesus says they're actually more dignified. I think that's beautiful. More lovable, more dear, and more worthy of sympathy. And just as my heart drew upon itself all divine sympathies by virtue of the sorrows suffered, in seeing sorrow in the creature, which is a special characteristic of my heart, watching over this sorrow, with all love, I pour upon her the joys and the contentments which my heart contains. So it's at the most difficult moments of life that the greatest joys can be poured in. That's the incredible bit. Joy and sorrow going together. But to my highest sorrow, Jesus said, while my heart would want to let my joys follow the sorrow that I send to creatures, not finding in them a love of suffering and true resignation. Now notice what blocks. A love of suffering is an acceptance of the cross. It doesn't mean you love pain as such. It's an acceptance of the cross. And true resignation, not my will, but thine be done. True resignation, not finding them like those which my heart had. My joys follow the sorrow, but in seeing that the sorrow has not been received with love and honour and with the highest submission, notice the highest submission, fiat, be it done unto me. My joys do not find the way to enter that sorrowful heart, and grieving, they come back into my own heart. That's Ephesians 4:30. Do not grieve the Holy Spirit. Now notice that the Lord intends the joy to follow the sorrow, because that's the balance in the spiritual life. And we're our own worst enemies when we don't allow the joy to follow the sorrow. Therefore, when I find a soul who is resigned, who is a lover of suffering, I feel her as though regenerated within my heart. And oh, how sorrows and joys, bitterness and sweetness alternate. I hold nothing back of all the goods that I can pour into her. Isn't that wonderful? So you can see that the thing that St. Therese taught in her lifetime is very important here. Therese said, go to God every day with empty hands. And if you go to God with empty hands, the past is gone. Your hands are not full of the past. Your hands are not full of problems. You go to God with empty hands today and he can fill them. It's fantastic. And no matter what the today gives you, whether it's joy or sorrow. So we now come to February the 18th, 1924. All created things near and far, known and unknown, have one single sound, and it's the I love you. This is beautiful. I was fusing myself in the divine will according to my usual way, Louisa said, in order to find. Now, do you fuse in order to find? I'm asking the question and I don't want an answer. Yeah. I just want you to think about it. I was fusing myself in order to find all created things and to be able to give my return of love for myself and for all. Now, as I was doing this, I thought to myself, my Jesus says that he has created everything for love of me and for love of each one. How can this be if many created things I don't even know? So many fishes that dart in the sea, so many birds that fly in the sky, so many plants, so many flowers, such great variety of beauty, excuse me, such great variety of beauty contained in the whole universe. Who knows them? Just a small number of them. Therefore, if I don't even know them, especially I, then, who have been confined in a bed for years and years, how can he say that all created things have the mark, the seal of his I love you for me? We're going to get a lovely answer to this now. Now, while I was thinking of this, my sweet Jesus moved in my interior in the act of picking up his ears in order to listen to me and told me, my daughter, yet it is true that each created thing has a distinct love for you. It is also true that you do not know them all, but this says nothing. On the contrary, it reveals to you my love even more and tells you in clear notes that my I love you for you is both near and far from you, both hidden and unveiled. I do not act like creatures who, when they are close, are all love, but as soon as you move away, they become cold and they are no longer able to love. In other words, out the door and you're forgotten. My love is stable and fixed. That's your Jeremiah 31:3 again. I love you with an everlasting love. Okay. It is near as much as it is far, hidden and secret. It has one single sound which is never interrupted, and it's I love you. So let's take the first example, which is the sun. Okay. See, you know the light of the sun, it is true. Indeed, you receive its light and its heat as much as you want. But more light surpasses you, so much so as to fill the whole earth. So you can take as much of the sun as you like, and there's an infinite amount left for everybody else. If you wanted more light, the sun would give it to you, even all of it. Now, all the light of the sun tells you, my, I love you, both that which is near and that which is far. Even more, as it covers the earth, it carries the little sonata of my I love you for you. And yet, you know neither the paths which the light covers, nor the land that it illuminates, nor the people who enjoy the beneficial influence of the solar rays. We would put S on that. But even though you do not know everything that the light does, you are in the same light. And if you do not take it all, it's because you lack the capacity to be able to absorb it all by yourself. This is a wonderful explanation of the sun. But in spite of this, you cannot say that all the light of the sun does not say to you, I love you. On the contrary, it makes a greater display of love because as it invades the earth, it keeps narrating my I love you to all, not just to one. Now we're taking the second example, which is water. Now it is the same for all the drops of water. You cannot drink them all, and you cannot enclose them within yourself. But in spite of this, you cannot say that they do not say, tell you my I love you. So all created things, whether known or unknown, all have the mark of my I love you, because all of them serve the harmony of the universe. Look at that. Serve the decorum of creation. Serve the mastery of our creative hand. Notice love serves. Do you notice it? I acted like a rich and tender father who loves his son. Since the son has to have the paternal house to take his position, the father prepares a sumptuous palace. Now, they're the seven mansions of St. Teresa of Avila. The sumptuous palace are the seven mansions of St. Teresa of Avila. Okay. The father prepares a sumptuous palace with innumerable rooms, each of which contains a certain something that will be of use to his son. Now, since those rooms are many, the son does not always see them. Even more, some of them he doesn't even know, because no necessity to use them has yet arisen for him. But in spite of this, can anyone perhaps deny that in each room there is a special paternal love waiting for the son, as the paternal goodness has provided also for that which might or might not be necessary for the son. Now, it's the divine providence is what you're looking at here. That's what we would call this. Divine providence. Taking care of all our needs, and God is never in a hurry and he's always on time. And so Jesus is describing it here as a house full of everything you need, and when you discover you need it, it has already been provided. And that's the way it is in creation and redemption and sanctification. He said, that's the way I did it. This son came out of my womb and I wanted him to lack nothing. Even more, I created many different things, and some enjoy one thing, some another. But everything has one single sound, I love you. Let's take one example. He says that everything in the universe is there for us. And you only know that it's there when you have a need. For example, human beings discovered that plants were medicinal only when they became sick. When they were well, they didn't need medicinal plants. Is that okay? In other words, the solution was there as soon as you went looking for it. So February the 20th, 1924. So this is all about Louisa being the first in line in the divine will, because she's the first of those who were born with original sin to live in the divine will. After all, my sweet Jesus has told me about his most holy will, I was thinking to myself, Louisa said, how can it ever be possible that there has not been one soul until now that has lived in the divine volition and that I'm the first one? Naturally, this would be a problem for her. And I would think that the problem is not just Louisa's. I think it's the priests needing an answer to this, because after all, they know all the theology and they know all the history of the church and all the rest of it, and all the canonized saints that have gone before them, and the apostles, for example. OK, so this is a question that was bound to be asked. Who knows how many others there have been before me, and in a more perfect, more active way than mine? But while I was saying this, my beloved Jesus moved in my interior. There's your Luke 17:21. The kingdom of God is within you. He said, my daughter, why do you not want to recognize the gift and the grace and your mission of having been called in a way all special and new to live in my will? Now, it's rather difficult for the priests who are guiding Louisa to understand that a new era is being revealed for the church. And so this answer is terribly important for the church as a whole. Had there been other souls in my church before you since the living in my will? Had there been other souls in my church before you, since the living in my will is the most important thing, the thing which interests me the most and for which I care so much? If that was so, there would have been traces. There would have been the norms, the teachings in my church from those who would have had the chance to live in my will. Like, for example, Francis de Sales wrote all about the introduction to the devout life, laid down all the laws, showed people exactly how to take this journey. That's what Jesus means. Somebody would have written it. There would have been books out there. There would have been the knowledge, the attractions, the effects and the goods which the living in my will contains. Now, in other words, the church would have a memory of it. The church has a long memory. There would have been the attractions of grace, because other people would have had it and therefore more people would be drawn to it. And the effects of living in the divine will would be in the church. And if none of that is there, then it means Louisa is the first. Had there been many other manifestations, I would have made use of my power, asking the sublime way of living in my will and so forth, making the sublime way of living in my will shine forth. In view of my great satisfaction and in seeing myself honoured by the soul with the glory of my own will, I would have put that soul in such a tight corner that she would not have resisted manifesting what I wanted. I just love that. Who's being put in a tight corner now to please manifest everything? Okay. And it's the little person who's number one. Just as there are sayings and teachings on living resigned and living patient, obedient, etc., there would have been this also. In other words, the other saints have left a testimony behind them as to how to reach the sanctity that they reached. So where are the teachings on the divine will is what Jesus is saying. I think Jesus is speaking directly to the church through the priests here. It would have been quite funny and strange if I had kept the thing which I love most hidden. Rather, the more one loves something, the more one wants to make it known. The more satisfaction and glory a way of living brings me, the more I want to diffuse it. It's not in the nature of true love to hide what makes others happy and rich. If you knew how I longed for this time in which my little newborn of my will would come to the light to make you live in my volition, what a cortege of grace I prepared in order to obtain the intent, you would remain stunned and you'd be more grateful and you'd live more attentive. I love that, isn't it? So the next section's the next two paragraphs is living in the divine will. Okay, wonderful teaching here. And I'm going to give it to you 1, 2, 3, 4. Ah, Jesus said, you do not know what it means to live in my will. Number one, It means to make the pure joys of the purpose of creation, my innocent amusements, of the reason why I created man, return to me. That's number one. Number two, it means to remove from me all the bitterness that the perfidious human will gave me almost at the dawn of creation. Number three, it means a continuous exchange between the human will and the divine will as the soul, fearing her own, lives of mine, we'd say from mine, while mine keeps filling the soul with joys, love and infinite goods. Oh, how happy I feel in being able to give whatever I want to this soul. This is number four. How happy I am to give whatever I want to this soul, because my will contains such capacity as to be able to receive everything. So there's no longer divisions between me and her. There is a stable union in operating, thinking, loving, because my will makes up for everything. So we remain in perfect accord and in communion of goods. This has been the purpose of creation, the creation of man, to have him live as our own child. That's the Romans 8:19. To have him live as our own child and to place all our goods in common with him so that he might be fully happy and we might be entertained with his happiness. That's a wonderful summary of living in the divine will. So we're not finished. Number five. Now, to live in my will is precisely this: to have the purpose, the joys, the feasts of creation returned to us. And you say that I should have kept it hidden in my church without letting it out. I would have turned heaven and earth upside down. I would have overwhelmed the hearts with an irresistible strength in order to make known that which will be the fulfillment of creation. Do you see how much I care for this living in my will, which, this is number six, places the seal upon all of my works so that all of them may be complete? And then number seven, to you, perhaps, this may seem nothing, or that there are similar things in the church. No, no, there's nothing similar to this. To me, on the contrary, it is the all of my works, and you must appreciate it as such. This is number seven, and be more attentive in fulfilling the mission I want from you. Now, there's the Lord actually giving a summary of what we've been told a number of times in previous volumes. See why summaries are important? Okay. So, February the 22nd, 1924. God enjoyed the pure joys of creation until man sinned. Then he enjoyed them again when the most pure virgin came to the light, and then when the word descended upon the earth. And finally, he will enjoy them again in a continuous way when creatures live in the divine will. So here we're going through the whole history of the divine will. I was thinking about what is written above, Louisa said, and I said to myself, how is it possible that the blessed Lord, after so many centuries, has not enjoyed the pure joys of creation, and that he is waiting for the living in the divine will? That's your Romans 8:19 again. The whole of creation is waiting. Okay. He's waiting for the living in the divine will in order to receive these joys, this glory, and the purpose for which everything was created. Now, while I was thinking of this and other things, my sweet Jesus made himself seen in my interior. There's your Luke 17:21. And through a light which he sent into my intellect, that's infused knowledge, he told me, my daughter, the pure joys of creation, my innocent amusement with my creatures. Now, my innocent amusement is your Genesis 3, I think it's Genesis 3:8, that God walked with Adam in the cool of the day. Do you remember? I did enjoy, but at intervals, not continuously. And when things were not stable and continuous, they increase one's sorrow even more. They cause one to yearn more to enjoy them again, and one would make any sacrifice to make them permanent. Okay, that's the desire of the lover, to have the beloved continuously, not just every now and then. So in the next paragraph, we're going to discover love lives by giving. So in the first place, this is number one, I enjoyed the pure joys of creation when after I had created everything, I created man until he sinned. Put the ring around the until. Between him and us, there was the highest accord. There was common joys, innocent amusement, Genesis 3:8. Our arms were always open to embrace him and to give him new joys and new graces. And by giving, we enjoyed ourselves so much as to form a continuous feast for ourselves and for him. Love lives by giving. That's why we're training each other to love lives by serving, by giving. It has got to have an outlet. For us to give is to rejoice. For us to give is happiness. For us to give is amusement. But as soon as man sinned and broke his will from ours, everything ended. Because why does everything end? Hebrews 12:14. Nothing unholy or unworthy can enter the presence of God. And the human will had come in then as a block. Everything ended because, since the fullness of our will was no longer in him, the current in order to be able to give and to continue the life of mutual happiness was missing. More so, since our will missing in him, the human will takes over. Watch this now. The divine will is now missing in him the capacity. That's a very important word. I ring that one. And the safeguard, look at that. In order to keep our gifts was missing. We no longer have the ability to actually do it. I can do all things in Christ who gives me the strength, but without him I can do nothing. So put John 15:5 there. We can do nothing without him. So number two, in the second place, we enjoyed the pure joys of creation when after many centuries, the Immaculate Virgin came to the light of the day. Because she had been preserved from even a shadow of sin. And she possessed all the fullness of our will. And between her and us, there was not a shadow of a split. Look at that, not a shadow of split between her will and ours. So there's the 100% giving. Our joys, our innocent amusements were returned to us. She brought to us all the feasts of creation as though on her lap. And we gave her so much. And we enjoyed ourselves so much in giving as to enrich her in every instant. Look at that. Every instant. With new graces, new contentments, new beauty, to the point that she could not contain any more. Now there you have the extraordinary generosity of God. But the Empress creature did not last long on the earth. She passed into heaven, and we could not find another creature in the low world. Now look at, earth is the low world. Heaven is the high place. And therefore you have an inkling as to why in the Old Testament people always built shrines on high places. We have to get up off this low world. We've got to try and get up to heaven. And they tried to build the Tower of Babel and other ziggurats as well to see could they get to heaven. You know, and now that we have discovered how you can fly, we still haven't got to heaven. It's very interesting. So we couldn't find another creature in the low world who would perpetuate our enjoyments and bring us the joy of creation. So number three, you can guess who this is. In the third place, we enjoyed the joys of creation when I, the eternal word, you see, you're getting the whole of the Bible handed back to you. The eternal word descended from heaven, took on my humanity. Now that's Philippians chapter 2. verses 6 to 11. By possessing the fullness of my will, my beloved mother had opened the currents between heaven and earth. She had put everyone in feast, heaven and earth. And the divinity being in feast out of love for a creature so holy. Now notice it's out of love for this one. Look at the importance of one in God. Because we live in a society where they say you need 100,000 signatures to make an impression. One person completely given to God is a majority. So, the divinity being in feast out of love for a creature so holy made me conceived in her virginal womb, giving her the divine fecundity so as to let me fulfill the great work of redemption. If there had not been this excelling virgin who took primacy in my will and lived perfect the perfect life of my volition, living in the divine will as if she did not have her own will, and by doing so, placing the joys of creation and the feasts in current, that means in circulation, the eternal word would never have come upon the earth to fulfill the redemption of mankind. He had to find a suitable dwelling, And that suitable dwelling had to be the ark. Remember the ark? The Ark of the Covenant. Okay. In which they placed the two tablets of stone. That is the word of God. They placed the manna. That's the bread of God. And they placed Aaron's rod, which budded, the priest of God. And all of that was pointing to the one who was word, bread and priest. In Mary's womb. So Mary is in fact the Ark of the Covenant. See then how the greatest thing, the most important, the most pleasing, and that which attracts God the most is the living in my will. And for one who lives in it, the divine will conquers, who lives in the divine will, that person conquers God. You need to colour that. That person conquers God. Because that's beyond our imagination, isn't it? That person conquers God and makes God give gifts so great as to astonish heaven and earth. Now you can see why the Lord wants all of us living in the divine will so that he can in fact open the heavens and pour the graces down upon the earth for the earth to recover. And these gifts that he wants to pour out for centuries upon centuries could not be obtained. Only can come by living in the divine will. Isn't that absolutely amazing? And look at the responsibility we have now to the rest of humanity. Oh, how my humanity, being on earth and containing the very life of the supreme volition, even more it was inseparable from me. It brought to the divinity in a wholly complete way all the joys, all the glory, all the requital of love of the whole of creation. You have to keep repeating that word, all. And the divinity was so delighted as to give me primacy over everything. That's Colossians chapter 1, verses 16 to 20. He's the first over all creation. And he gave me the right to judge all peoples. Now, the right to judge is John 8, verses 15 to 16. And Revelation 19, verses 11 to 21. Oh, what good did the creature obtain, knowing that a brother of theirs, Jesus came as a brother. What's going to be said now, I think, is absolutely astonishing. That a brother of theirs, who loved them so much and had suffered so much in order to place them in safety, would be their judge. Now, that needs to be taken off the sheet and put written on something, because it's you tell all the people who are trying to love God and to serve God that if they love him, they don't have to worry about meeting him. But you do have to tell people who don't love him that they need to get to know him before that day. And it's the gentler the way we put it to them, that I think the more they will hear it, you know. Like I remember saying to a lady who was dying, you know, you're going to meet Jesus in a short while. And she said, yep. I said, is everything all right between you and him? I said, because when you meet him, I want him to give you a big hug. And she said, I love him, you know. This is a lady, she's nearly 90. I love him, you know. And I said, have you fixed up between yourself and one of her sons, which I named? Oh, she said. I said, don't have Jesus ask you about it. I said, fix it. And if you fix it, I said, you're going to get a big, big, big hug. I'm just telling you how I talk to people about it. And anyway, I had to go away and she died when I was away. And I came back, she was dead and buried. And I phoned the son and I said, did anything happen with your mum's passing? And he said, oh, yes, he said. He said, a 2-ton truck was lifted off my shoulders. I said, she did it. And he said, yes. He said, she told me that you told her that she wouldn't get the hug from Jesus if she didn't fix it up with me. Isn't that fantastic? And so because it was given in a very childlike way to her, she was able to give it in a childlike way to him. And all the talking and all the you said this and you did that and all, none of that was needed. And he got an incredible grace and he followed her not very long afterwards. Both of them were released. It's the most fantastic thing. But I think this is an incredible thing. What good the creature obtains knowing that a brother of ours, John 20, verse 17, go and tell my brothers, he said, I've risen. Go and tell my brothers, a brother of ours who loved them so much and had suffered so much in order to place them in safety was to be their judge. In seeing the whole purpose of creation enclosed in me, that's your Colossians 1, 16 to 20 again, the divinity, as though stripping itself of everything, conceded to me all rights over creatures. Now that needs a VIP just beside that. All rights over creatures. But my humanity passed into heaven, and no one was left on the earth who could perpetuate the full living in the divine will. Notice the full, ring the word full. There are plenty of people trying to do the divine will. And therefore, rising above everyone and everything in our will would bring us the pure joys and would let us continue, that's the operative thing, our innocent amusements with a terrestrial creature. Now notice how God is after the earth. It's people on the earth he wants in this relationship. And therefore we have to look at this. So my instinct is to put Psalm 8 there. Lord, what is man that you would even give him a thought, or the son of man that you would care for him? And yet you made him little less than a god. With glory and honour you crowned him, giving him power over the works of your hands. There's something about the mystery of us I think none of us have cracked. Why is it that God is so interested in us? Why is it with all the rebellion that's gone on from the very beginning, he hasn't wiped us out? Why does he start all over again? Why does he very badly need you and me to conquer? I have a suspicion myself, but it's only a suspicion. I think he wants Satan defeated by little people. Not by great ones, but by little people. The little people who had to struggle themselves. And so the pride of Satan will be brought down. That's my own suspicion. I'm not saying it's right. It's probably much greater than that. So Jesus said our joys were interrupted and our amusements broken on the face of the earth. So you can even hear the sorrow in that statement. Okay. On hearing this, Louisa said, "My Jesus, how can it be as you say? It's true that our mother passed into heaven, and so did your humanity. But did you not bring the joys with you?" In other words, she's saying, how can you have this sorrow in heaven? I don't get it. I thought heaven was all joy. So as to be able to continue your innocent amusements in heaven with your celestial father. You see, but he's after the earth. And Jesus said, the joys of heaven are our own. And no one can take that away from us or diminish us. Now watch this. This is part of the answer I'm trying to give you. But those which come to us from the earth, we're in the act of acquiring. In other words, each one of us is a territory to be conquered. Isn't it interesting? And the game is formed precisely in the act of the new acquirements, between the acquirement of the victory or the defeat. So what goes on in our lives is either a victory or defeat for him. Isn't that very interesting? So are the joys of the acquirement form, and when one is defeated, sorrows are formed. Okay. So victory over the human will is required for the divine will to have the final triumph. The triumph of the Sacred Heart will be the triumph over the human will, I think. So then Jesus said, now let's come to us, my daughter. When I came upon the earth, man was so engulfed in evil and so full of the human will that the living in my will could find no place. So in my redemption, that's number one, first I interceded for man, the grace of resignation to my will, because in the state he was incapable of receiving the greatest gift, which was the living in my will. And then number two, I impetrated or interceded for him the greatest grace and the crown and fulfillment of all graces, the living in my will, so that our pure joys of creation and our innocent amusements would resume their course once again on the face of the earth. See, about 20 centuries have passed since the true and pure joys of creation were interrupted, because we did not find sufficient capacity, total stripping of the human will. That's the bit you need to colour. Total stripping of the human will. That's what it comes down to. Because I've been saying that our motto on a daily basis has to be, not my will, but thine be done. Not my will, not my will, not my will, but thine be done. So we didn't have... we did not find sufficient capacity, total stripping of the human will, to be able to entrust the property of the divine will. Now, in order to do this, we had to choose a creature who would be more proximate. Now, Our Lady wasn't proximate because she was given so much grace. Proximate means born with original sin. Okay, so Louisa had to be like us, born with original sin. And associated with the human generation. So she had to be like us, born in the human condition. Had I placed my mother as an example, they would have felt very distant from her, and they would have said, well, how could she not live in the divine will since she was exempt from the stain of sin and even from the origin, the original sin? Therefore, they would have shrugged their shoulders. He knows us very well, doesn't he? And they wouldn't have given it a thought, which is correct. They would have said, she's too good. I mean, there's nothing in common with me. If I had placed my humanity as an example, they would have been frightened even more. And they would have said, but he has God. He was God and man. And since the divine will was his own life, it's no wonder that he lived in the supreme volition. Therefore, so that this living in my will might have life in the church, I was to go down the ladder, I was to descend lower, and I was to choose a creature from their own level. I find that very interesting, do you? So what is the Lord doing here? Taking away all our excuses. Providing her with sufficient graces and making my way into her soul, I was to empty her of everything. Now, notice what is required for the divine will to take over. Now, all of that you find in volumes 1-4. Making her understand the great evil of the human will, so that she would abhor it so much as to choose death rather than doing her own will. Then, giving her the gift of my divine will, assuming the attitude of a teacher, I made her understand all the beauty, the power, the effects, the value, and the way in which she was to live in my eternal will, so that she might live in the divine will. I established for in her the law of my will, and that's revealed to us in all the teachings. I acted as a second redemption, in which I established the gospel, the sacraments, the teachings as primary life in order to be able to continue the redemption. Had I left nothing as the foundation, what would creatures cling to? What would they do? So I did the same thing for living in the divine will. How many teachings have I not given to you? How many times have I not led you by the hand in the eternal flights of my volition? And you, hovering over the whole of creation, have brought the pure joys of creation to the feet of the divinity, and we have enjoyed ourselves with you. Now, because we have chosen a creature who apparently has no disparity from them, I love the apparently. You look like them. So apparently there's no difference between you and them. They will take courage. And finding the teachings, the way, and knowing the great good contained in the living in my will, they will make it their own. And so the pure joys of creation and our innocent amusements will have no longer be broken on the face of the earth. So now we've come to our level. And this is very important what he says now. And even if there should be only one for each generation to live in our will, it will always be a feast for us. And in the feasts, there's always a greater display, and one is more generous in giving. Oh, how many goods will they obtain for the earth, while their creator enjoys himself on its plains, that's on the earth's plains. Therefore, my dear daughter, be attentive to my teachings, because this is about letting me found a new law. Not a terrestrial law, but a celestial one. Not a law of mere sanctity. Look at that. I thought sanctity was incredible until I read these writings. Not a law of mere sanctity, but a divine law. A law which no longer let one distinguish the terrestrial citizens from the celestial ones. Isn't that something? In other words, that you'd be living the heavenly life on earth. Now, what's going to be said here was prophesied in Jeremiah 31, verses 33 to 34. I will write this law on their hearts. Each one of them will know me personally, so they won't need neighbor to teach neighbor. They will all know me, he said. And everybody's been wondering, you know, what was Jeremiah really getting at? And I can only see the fulfillment of that in this divine law that the Lord is revealing here. And this is a law which will no longer let one distinguish the terrestrial citizens from the heavenly ones. A law of love, which destroying everything that can prevent even the slightest the union of the creature with her creator, will place all his goods in common, removing from her, watch this, you'll know where you're at in the divine will when I'm going to read this. Removing from her all the weaknesses and all the miseries of original sin. Look where it's going. The law of my divine will place so much strength. Now, that strength is usually called fortitude, the gift of fortitude. And I always call fortitude steel for your soul, like the steel girders in the great buildings to stop them from coming down in the hurricanes. The law of my will place so much strength in the soul as to serve her as a sweet enchantment in such a way as to put to sleep, notice not death, put to sleep the evils of her nature. In other words, they won't automatically crop up every time. To put to sleep the evils of her nature and to substitute them with the sweet enchantment of the divine goods. So this means that you're being drawn heavenward so much all the time that the drawing downward is not noticed as much. Now, even in chemistry, we say that all matter has got to go towards a greater complexity or fall back into entropy. No matter can stay on its own. It all goes forward to a greater complexity or falls back into entropy. So here, if we have the evils of the human nature won't take over because they'll be substituted with the sweet enchantment of the divine goods. Because we've read several times as we've come to this point about Louisa saying to the Lord, "What's wrong? I can actually feel my nature." I always enjoy that, you know, that she's been so enthralled with all that's going on. She didn't even feel what we feel. It's really amazing. Remember how many times he said that you have seen me right in the depths of your soul. Now, that's Jeremiah 31, you see, that I was telling you about. I will write this law on their hearts. How many times he said you have seen me right in the depth of your soul. It was the new law of the living in my will. And first, I delighted in writing it in order to expand your capacity. Do you see what is needed all the time? If the Lord is going to give to us, our capacity has got to be expanded. Otherwise, we can't take it. And then I took the attitude of a teacher in order to explain it to you. How many times have you not seen me taciturn and pensive in the depths of your soul? It was the great crafting of my will that I was forming. And you, not seeing me speak, lamented that I didn't love you anymore. It was precisely then that pouring out upon you, my will would enlarge your capacity, would confirm you in it, and would love you the most. There's your footprints in the sand, you remember? Mm-hmm. Therefore, do not want to investigate anything of what I do, but rest secure always in my will. I'm going to stop there for tonight.